Okay, about to get started. So good morning, everyone. My name is Pedro DeRose. I'm a program manager on the SharePoint search team. Today I'm going to be talking to you guys about how to build specialized search experiences using some of the new features that we put into SharePoint 2013. Before I go too much further, though, I actually want to introduce one other person. Could you stand up, Victoria? So everyone, this is Victoria Taranoff. She is the dev lead on Search's query team. Every time you perform a search on SharePoint 2013, it's going through code that she and her team wrote. Everything I'm going to show you today wouldn't have been possible without that team. If you guys could please. Okay, so now you know who to blame if the demos don't work. I hope you brought running shoes. Okay, so let me actually also introduce you to, is this going to work? There we go, Contoso Electronics. So Contoso Electronics is a fictional company that creates electronics. And they provide this very nice knowledge center website for their fictional employees to learn more about the products that they create, the research that they're doing. And this knowledge center is backed by certain libraries on this website, authoring.contoso.local. These libraries that start with knowledge center are the ones that back have the assets that are shown in that knowledge center. Now, if you go into one of these, you see a whole bunch of documents and pictures and that sort of thing. And they've actually done a really good job. They've created this nice metadata column that uses a taxonomy term to say what topics in the Knowledge Center each one of these items is about. Okay? Now, Contoso also has an excellent, of course, enterprise search experience. But if you're someone who works on the Knowledge Center and you work with the assets in that Knowledge Center, sometimes this isn't exactly what you wanted. I mean, it's great, but it just isn't tailored to your special data, your special scenarios. What you really need in those sort of situations is a specialized search experience. So we're going to build one. Does someone have a watch? Just raise your hand if someone has a watch. Watch? Okay, time me. So when you go to build a specialized search center, the first thing you do is build this new thing that we've created called a result source. This is the heart of your new search experience, and it's kind of a combination between a federated location in 2010 and a scope in 2010. It's how you say, whenever you send me a query, I'm always going to return asset results. Okay? So what are assets results? Well, they're still coming from the local SharePoint index, and they're still SharePoint results. But here's where I get to do the scoping. And I get to use search syntax to restrict the results that are going to come back. So here I'm going to say siteauthoring.contoso.local/knowledge-center*, a prefix match on the site property. Gidok, hit save. And now I've created the heart of my search experience, which is this result source. What it needs now is a face. So we'll go back to the Enterprise Search Center, add a new page, we'll call it Asset Results. And since this is an Enterprise Search Center, it's already going to have all the proper web parts on it, a search box, search web part, that sort of thing. And all we got to do is come in here and edit the search results web part so that the query that it creates to send to the back end, we're going to change that query a little bit, and instead of sending it to the default result source, which is local SharePoint results and returns results from all across SharePoint, we're instead going to tell it to use that new asset results result source that we created. Hit OK here, OK here, and publish. We'll do a sample query for cameras and time. How long did it take? I'm sorry? A minute, okay, less than 2 minutes, guys. Less than 2 minutes to create a new specialized search center. And mind you, it's the simplest of all search centers. All it's doing is making sure that everything that gets returned is from the proper authoring.contoso.local with Knowledge Center images or Knowledge Center documents, right? So it's the simplest of all search experiences. But this is the foundation. This is the foundation from which you can start beefing it up and building something that's really tailored to this data and these experiences. And it takes less than 2 minutes. So the takeaway here is that, oh, there you go. The takeaway here is that if you've got special data and special scenarios, you can build a specialized search center. There's just no excuse anymore. So let me give you a couple of examples just to get your mind going on this, of the sort of specialized search experiences that we have at Microsoft. So for example, we've got a library search experience. Okay, and this has special data like textbooks versus ebooks versus just normal books, and special scenarios like I want to see what books I have on hold. I want to be put on hold for a particular book. Okay, we've also got a specialized search experience called Infopedia, and this is for the field. Whenever the field goes out to help customers like you guys, they use this to find white papers, to find presentations. And in SharePoint 2010, all of these take an enormous amount of investment to build, right? Not just to make them look the way they do, but to make them behave the way they do, to make them actually understand the scenarios that the people using them are going to need to get done. Well, in SharePoint 2013, we have made this a lot easier. It is a lot easier to quickly build a specialized search experience. For example, we just built the basic one, right? Took less than 2 minutes. The heart is a result source. This is what says the sort of results that your experience is going to return. And then the face is the web part that creates the query, sends it to the result source, and then shows the results when they come back. Now, as I said, this is the most basic of search experiences. You can start adding a lot of things to make it, you know, a lot beefier, looking a lot nicer. You can use result types and display templates to show different results differently, right? Really showcase the specialized data that you have. You can use BCS connectors to crawl more of your enterprise, custom schema and ranking models to improve your relevance. And these are all really, really cool features in SharePoint. We've got a lot of talks that cover these, other talks that cover these. So today, I'm not going to be speaking about them so much. What I am going to be talking about is our new infrastructure for query pipeline extensibility, which we call query rules. So query rules let you do a lot of different things. They let you, for example, say, you know what? For certain queries, I'm just going to bypass search. Here are the results. I'm just going to put them on top. I want these results in this order. So this is sort of like best bets in SharePoint 2010. Now they're part of the overarching infrastructure for query pipeline extensibility. They're part of query rules now. Okay? But with query rules, you can also do things like say, you know what, I want to make a copy of the user's query and federate it out to a different result source, and then bring those results in as a block of results. Right? You guys ever do a search on Bing or Google and get back a block of results that say image results for whatever, video results for whatever? It's the same thing. We've got a bunch baked in, except that now you guys get to configure it yourselves for your scenarios, for your search experiences. And the key to all of this, the thing that makes query rules really cool, is that it's all conditional, which means that what you're doing is you are responding intelligently to what the user is trying to do instead of just what the user typed. You're understanding their intent, you're acting to help them, and then you're communicating with them through compelling UI. So to give you an example, if the user comes in and types camera's picture, they're probably not looking for a document that happens to have the words camera and picture in it. They're probably looking for pictures of cameras. And query rules let you configure something that understands this, that acts to help by going out and grabbing pictures of cameras, and that brings them back in a nice little result block titled image results for cameras, so that the user knows what you did. They know that you understood what they were trying to do. So today, this is what we're going to go through. This is the agenda. We've already done the first thing, which is we created a simple search vertical. So the next thing we want to do is start beefing it up. Let's start adding some of those query rule smarts. And we'll start off by adding the simplest of all query rules, which is equivalent to a SharePoint 2010 best bet. We're going to say if the user searches for exactly camera or cameras, let's show them what we call now a promoted result to the Knowledge Center entry for cameras. So we're going to go to site settings, query rules under search. And while this is the simplest query rule, it's actually really illustrative of the three big questions you have to ask yourself when configuring any query rule. The first question is, where is my user going to be? What search vertical are they going to be using? Am I configuring this for asset search, or for video search, or for people search? Right, so in this case, the user, we're configuring this for asset search. So the way that you tell the system this is you pick the result source that is the heart of that search experience. Okay, this is why we call that result source the heart of it, because we use it as a proxy for that search experience in a lot of different places. So first you say, okay, we are going to be managing query rules for the asset search. This filters down to just the query rules that affect the asset search, which right now isn't many, so let's add this new one. So like we said, this is going to be a query rules about cameras, so we'll call it cameras. And the second question you have to ask with query rules is, when should it fire? What are the conditions under which it should fire? How are we going to understand what the user is trying to do? So now we go to the condition section and we see that it's the current condition type is query matches keyword exactly. It's exactly what we wanted. So we'll say camera or cameras. And the third question you ask now is, when the condition fires, what do you want the query rule to do? And in this case, we want to add a promoted result. So for people who are used to configuring best bets in SharePoint 2010, this dialog should be very similar. It's basically the same thing. I'm going to say knowledge center cameras. internet.contoso.local/cameras. Learn more about our cameras at the knowledge center. And that's pretty much it. So if all you're doing is something like a best bet, it's actually about the same number of steps. Start a query rule, give it a name, give it the keywords, give it the promoted result, and you're done. So if that's what you guys are used to doing, it hasn't gotten any harder. Except what you've created at the end of this process is a query rule. Okay? And you can start to see the query rule here. It's got a name, it's got conditions, and it's got actions. So in this sense, it's almost like an Outlook email rule, right? It looks to see the email coming in, decides, oh, does this match the criteria I set? And if so, takes an action. It's the same thing, except with users typing queries. And you're configuring this in order to control the search experience for the user. Okay, so here we have a query rule where if it exactly matches camera or cameras, we're going to show this promoted result. So let's open up the search experience and type cameras. And sure enough, okay, promoted result shows up. That's nice. But we can do better. We don't need to play whack-a-mole anymore with individual queries and individual results in order to try to address that. Query rules are a lot more powerful than that. You can actually address a whole class of queries at once. So instead of just addressing cameras, what if I want to do something intelligent whenever the user searches for any topic in the Knowledge Center? So we'll make a query rule called topics. Well, as it happens, we saw that the taxonomy already has a term with all of these topics. So we can just leverage that. We can say, okay, one of the options for conditions is query matches dictionary exactly. So this is good when you're trying to match on people names and also when you're trying to match on a taxonomy term. So let's import that dictionary from the term store. Knowledge Center. And now we've got a condition that will fire whenever the user's query exactly matches something in the taxonomy term, in any language in that taxonomy term. Right? So for people who have multiple languages in your deployments, that's nice. Okay, so now we've got something matching a class of queries. We can still bring in a promoted result. We'll make a general one for the Knowledge Center. internet.contoso.local. Learn more about our products at the Knowledge Center. So we've already got something more powerful than best bets. Because now somebody else can update this taxonomy, someone who's in charge of the Knowledge Center. And this query will just keep working. Right? We'll keep updating this dictionary that we imported, and this query rule will just keep working. But since we're matching on a class of queries, maybe we want to do better than just throw one result at it. Maybe what we want to do is bring in a block of results with items about that topic. We've already got the metadata, right? The items are already labeled with this. Let's use that. So let's add a result block. So for now, forget this top part. Go down to the next section. When you add a result block, the first thing you do is give it a title. So these are going to be asset results for. And then the stuff in curly braces, I'll get to it later. For now, whenever you see that, just think whatever the user is searching for. Okay? We'll get to it later. So, asset results for whatever the user is searching for. So, what do we want to do? We want to say, take what the user is searching for and search on this KC category metadata that we have in the Knowledge Center libraries. This is just search syntax. Hit OK. There's that result block, hit save. And now I've got a second query rule. And you can see here exactly what it does. If the query exactly matches something in this dictionary, which is the Knowledge Center dictionary, we're going to both add a promoted result for the Knowledge Center as a whole, and we're going to add a result block titled asset results for whatever the user was searching for. So let's give that a shot with laptops. And there we go. Right, just a few clicks. And now you've got something that if I search for any topic in the Knowledge Center will get both the best bet and that block. But we can go one step further. We're still searching over a set of a priori queries. We knew these queries, we put them in a taxonomy term, and sure, they're easier to maintain, but it's still a finite set. What if we want to do partial matches, like that camera pictures example I showed at the beginning? Let's actually give that a shot. So yet another query rule. This will be the pictures query rule. And what we want to do is we want to say, whenever the user searches for something, 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 picture, let's show them pictures of what they were really searching for. Okay? So that picture term is what we call an action term, because it tells you what action to take on the rest of the query. It's not the subject of the query. It just tells you to filter the rest of the query by pictures, right? So we call these action terms, and there is a condition that makes these really easy to configure query rules for. So query contains action term. I'm going to search for picture or pictures. And whenever we see a block of these, whenever we see a query that matches this, what we want to do is bring back image results for whatever the user is searching for. And so here, we're configuring the query that's going to fill that result block. That's what we're doing on the second line here. We're configuring the query that will fill this result block. We want to just take what the user was searching for and add content type picture. Hit OK. Hit save. And there's our third query rule. When the query contains picture or pictures as an action term, so it has to contain other stuff as well, we'll show a block of image results for it. So let's give that a shot. Laptops, picture, and there we go. So now we've got something where the user can type anything in picture, and we're going to try to do a good job of understanding what the user actually wanted here and bring it in. And since it's just a block, since it's not taking over all of the results, if you get it wrong, that's okay. They can just skip it and go to the other results. Yeah, question? Right. So there's a question if it would work for synonyms. You can put in a list as long as you want of keywords that you're trying to match on. And when it comes to action terms, you can even actually point to a dictionary, just a taxonomy term, where you can do a lot of the stuff there as well. Yep. That's right. That's a good question. Let me actually get back to that, because we'll cover something similar to that. Yeah? It's in the term store. There's a question over there somewhere? Oh, I'm sorry. The question was, does the dictionary that you import have to live in the taxonomy or can live somewhere else? And the answer is it has to live in the taxonomy. Yeah? So there was a question of, can you set a condition based on a relevancy score? Let me get to that as well, because that's on the very next slide, actually. Yep. It will show both, and I'll get to that as a little bit as well. Yeah. Yeah. So that's an excellent question. This is an artifact of the sample data. Basically, what's happening here is we're actually performing a query. We are taking that query that we configured, whatever the user searched for, content type, colon, pictures, and we're performing that query, taking whatever results came back and showing them in that block. And you can actually go further. You can say, you know what, in this result block, use this display template or use result types. And so you can totally configure how the thing is looking there and what it gets filled with. Another question? Yes? Do we do contains on keywords? As in, like, does it, if a keyword appears anywhere in the... So, not with action terms, but we do support regular expressions in the conditions. And so you can write a regular expression that searches for a particular word in the middle of a query. Okay, so let me move on a little bit, see if it answers some of the outstanding questions. So, great. So at this point, we've covered three of the five different types of conditions that query rules support. We'll get to the other two in a bit. But there's a takeaway that I wanted everyone to get from what we've been talking about so far, which is what these query rules are doing is they are letting you conditionally control the experience in your search vertical. Okay, so what do I mean by the experience? Well, back in SharePoint 2010, the experience was made up of two types of results. Promoted results, which we called best bets. These were the results where we said, you know what, we know what we're doing. Always show them for this query. Always show them on top. We control the order. And then there were ranked results, where the system decided whether or not to show them and in what order to show them. Well, in 2013, we've added a new thing. It's result blocks. And just like normal results, they come in two flavors. They can be promoted, and they can be ranked. So you can have multiple query rules that create, say, two promoted result blocks. And because they're promoted, we'll show both of them whenever that rule fires above the normal results. And you can also have a bunch of query rules that create, say, five ranked result blocks. And when that happens, the system decides whether or not to show them and in what order. And it does this by learning which blocks tend to be good and tend to be bad, just in general, and also for specific queries. So it can even learn, oh, this block is generally not so great, but for this query, it's actually quite good. So show it and show it near the top. And it does this based on how often people click on something in the block versus how often they skip it and click on something afterwards. Okay, so the system adapts with these ranked result blocks, which means that you can take a few chances. You can say, I could interpret this query in a bunch of different ways. Let's have a result block for each. And the system will learn over time which of these result blocks work for which queries. Okay, so we've got a total of four different things now in the experience. And not surprisingly, query rules have four actions that they can take correspondingly. Right? They can add a promoted result. They can add a promoted block. They can add a ranked block. And they can change the ranked results. So these are the results that come back from the user's query, the normal results, independent of the blocks. Okay? And we can actually have query rules go in and say things like, let's sort that by date. Or we'll still sort by rank, but PDFs, not so hot for this query. Let's sort of push them down a little. Don't just shove them entirely out, but just demote them a bit. PowerPoints, these are great. Bump them up a bit. And so you actually have that degree of fine-grained control over even the ranked results when you're using query rules. Okay. So at this point, we've got a reasonably smart experience. We've added some query rules to our assets vertical. Time to advertise it to the rest of the company. So when you advertise a vertical, effectively what you're doing is you're making the everything vertical, the enterprise-wide search, respond intelligently to when users want, in this case, asset results. Okay? And there's two ways that a user can tell you that they want asset results, explicitly and implicitly. So explicitly would be if we had, say, a link up here that said assets, and the user could say, oh, I want assets. I will click on the assets link, and now you know they want assets. So that's very easy. We can actually just do that really quick. We'll go to site settings. Under search, we'll go to search settings, and we have configure search navigation right here. Just click Add Link. We'll call this Assets. Browse for the asset results page that we added. Insert. OK. And OK. And that's it. Come here, do a search for laptop so you can see. And now we've got an assets link that when you click on it, makes it feel just like the inbox verticals. And it takes you right to that experience that we've been building. Right, so that's how you advertise this for when users tell you explicitly what they're looking for. What about implicitly? So what I mean by this is the user just did a search that makes you go, oh, maybe they were looking for assets. Let's show them a block of results that contains results from asset search. Well, this is query rules. Let's go create a query rule. Okay, first question that you ask when you create query rules. Where is the user? What search vertical am I configuring this for? It's no longer asset search, right? Because now we're making the enterprise search smarter. So we've got to pick a different result source. We've got to pick local SharePoint results, because that's the heart of enterprise search. That returns every result in SharePoint. So we pick it, and we see that we filter down to the query rules that apply to enterprise search. We're going to add a new query rule. We're going to call it assets. Now the second question, how do we recognize that a user is looking for assets. We've got a bunch of options. Option one, we know that we've got that dictionary. And we can say, if they're looking for a knowledge center topic, there's a good chance they're looking for assets. What else? Well, if the user types camera asset, laptop assets, that's kind of an indicator, right? Well, that's an action term. So we can add an action term condition. Query contains action term, asset, or assets. What else? Well, it turns out that query rules give you a couple of condition types that are really, really nice for the scenario. So one of them is query is more common than source. So what this means is, let's take a look at the query the user just typed. Is this query more commonly performed on asset search than it is on enterprise search, where I am now? If so, that's probably an asset search. Now just let that sink in for a bit here. Right? The user's coming in, they're typing a query that is not a knowledge center topic. It does not have the word assets anywhere in it. But we understand that they are looking for assets because everyone else who does this query, or nearly everyone else, goes and ends up doing it on asset search. And it's just, it feels totally magical to the user. It's like, this thing is reading my mind. How did it know I wanted assets? It's actually really, really nice. Okay, another condition that is similarly magical is the result type commonly clicked. So what this one is let's take a look at the query the user just typed. Is this a query where users often end up clicking on a result of a particular type? So for example, is this a query where users often end up clicking on a picture? If so, maybe they're looking for assets. In this world, most pictures are in the asset library. So if the users often do a search and end up clicking on a picture, maybe they're looking for assets, right? It's another one of these magical things that the system just learns over time, and it learns it for your scenarios, for your business, no matter how different that is from everybody else's. Okay, great. So now we've got four different ways of recognizing a potential asset search. And what we want to do is bring in a result block of results from asset search. So this will be asset results. We can just keep the query that the user typed and just send it over to asset result, which is the result source at the heart of our asset search vertical. But let's go one step further. We'll show the block, but at the bottom of the block, we want a little link that says show more, so that when the user clicks on that link, it actually takes them to asset search. So this is a configuration option under settings. It's called the more link. And we can just put in a URL that more link takes them to. So let's go up here, do a search on assets, and just borrow that URL. Except that instead of searching for laptops, we'll just copy whatever the user is searching for. And that's it. Hit save. And here's our query rule in enterprise search. Four different ways of recognizing an asset search. And no matter which one of these fires, that result block is going to do the right thing with the query. It's going to take what the user was actually searching for and send it off to asset search and bring back a block of results. So let's see that happen. Laptops, we're currently on assets. Click on everything, and there's the block. Change that to, say, Contoso, which is not a knowledge center topic. Asset, and there's the block. And that show more link, check this out, this is kind of cool. You click on show more, and it takes you to the asset search. And it's smart enough to realize that asset was just an action term. It just told you that they were looking for assets. They're not actually looking for an asset with the word asset in it. Asset just told you they were looking for assets. And we've actually made it so that that more link you can configure so that when it sends you to asset search, it only sends the actual subject of the user's query, which in this case was Contoso. Okay, so that's pretty cool. Great. So. At this point now, we've taken our experience. We've done a great job of advertising it. Yeah? I'm sorry, I can't. Are the mics on for the questions? Yeah. Yeah. It's an excellent question. So that more link is just a URL. You can make it go anywhere. And what we did is we just baked the user search into the URL. That's why we copied the URL from doing an asset search. So you can actually send it anywhere. And if where you send it has a different look and feel, it'll have a different look and feel. I'm sorry. So that's an excellent question. The question was, how do you get back to search results? Well, if the more link sends you outside of the search experience, you'll have to use the back button. But so long as it's sending you actually to another vertical, you're nicely within the search experience. Yes. So you can search, of course, aggregates over whatever you tell it to aggregate. That could be many site collections. And this is just search. So it can totally search over multiple site collections at once. That's a great question. So in one query rule, no. But there are some tricks, and we'll get to those. OK. So remember how I kept telling you guys about those funny curly braces? And we'll talk about them later, but pretend they mean what the user searched for. Time to talk about them. So those curly braces are part of a new configurable object in the query pipeline called query transforms. What a query transform does is write in the name. It takes an incoming query and transforms it, changes it, before sending it to the rest of the pipeline. And there's three places in the pipeline where you're configuring these things. The first is in the web part, right? That was that change query button that we clicked. What you're doing there is you are configuring a query transform that changes the user's query before sending it to the back end for processing. The second place where you can configure it is in query rule actions. Now, these are conditional. They're only going to happen if the query rule conditions fire. But then you can configure a transform that transforms the user's query in order to get the new query that will fill the result block. Or you can transform the user's query in order to change the ranked results that they're seeing because you changed the query. And the final place where you're configuring query transforms is in the result source. That's how you restrict the results from a result source to only particular things, is by transforming the query so that you put the restriction right into the search. Right? That was that thing that we did at the very, very beginning where I said we're just going to add site, colon, and then the prefix match. That was just transforming the query to drop in that site restriction. Okay, so these are the three places where you can configure it. Let's actually look at what a transform is doing. The key here is to understand that a query is not just a bunch of characters that the user typed. That's how it starts. But the system creates a complex object out of it that has a bunch of properties. One of these properties is the search terms, what the user actually typed. But it also has what result source is this query going to? What sort order should I use? And a bunch of contextual stuff, like what's the date? What's the user? What site was this done on? And what a query transform can do is it takes this incoming query, and it can replace, it can clobber any property in the incoming query. So for example, this query transform is going to come in and clobber the result source with asset results. So it used to be local SharePoint results, now it's going to be asset results. But what about what the user typed? Right? Like, you don't want to clobber that. You want to build on it. You want to add a filter to what the user typed. You don't want to replace it with something that you configured before the user ever did a search, right? Well, that's where those curly braces come in. Those are things called query variables. And the way they work is that when you use them in the query text that you're replacing, at runtime, we come in and replace the variable with whatever the value of that property was in the incoming query. So here what's going to happen is in's going to come search terms cameras, and we're going to replace search terms. But we're going to replace it with whatever was in search terms plus a site restriction. And so the end result is you're going to get a query that looks like this. It's going to be cameras and then the site restriction, going to the asset results result source, and still sorting by rank. Because if a query transform doesn't clobber something, it leaves it alone. Okay, everybody get that? There's going to be a quiz. I'm not joking. Pop quiz. Each of these blocks represents a query transform configured in one of the three places where you can configure a transform in the pipeline. That first one is on a web part. It's setting the result source. The second one is in a query rule action, a change result action that happens to fire for this user's query. And the final one is on the result source, guaranteeing the sort of results that that result source returns. In comes the query cameras. What's going to come out? So think about it for a bit. Let me get a drink. Okay, let's step through it. In comes the query. System makes a complex object out of it. Search terms, cameras, result source, whatever the default is configured to. Sort, order, rank. It's the first transform in the web part. That guy is going to replace search terms with search terms, so nothing changes. It's also going to set the result source to local SharePoint and the sort order to date. So the query that comes out of that is search terms, cameras, result source, local SharePoint, sort order, date. Now the query rule fires. In comes the action that's going to change that query again, and this is what it changes it to. It takes the incoming search terms, which is cameras, and adds the content type restriction, replaces the result source with asset results, and leaves the sort alone. Now it hits the result source. What that's going to do is it's, again, going to replace search terms with whatever is in search terms in the incoming query. That's this whole guy, including the content type restriction. So it's going to take this whole guy and replace search terms with that whole guy plus a site restriction, and it's going to clobber the rank. And so the final query, when all is said and done, that actually gets executed on the system at the end of this user query is cameras plus the content type restriction plus the site restriction with a sort of rank. Couple of interesting takeaways from this. First one is that whatever transform you configure on this web part is only going to affect that web part. There's no other way of getting to that transform, which means this is the place for one-off changes. If you want a transform that only affects that web part, that's the place to put it. The second takeaway, query rules are conditional, which means these transforms are conditional. If you want a transform that only happens under certain situations for certain scenarios, you probably want a query rule, either a result block or a change result action. Finally, result sources guarantee their transforms because they go last. They get to clobber everybody else. Okay? So anything you put into a result source transform is guaranteed, which means you gotta be careful. Look at what actually ended up happening in this case. The web part asked for a sort by date. It did not get a sort by date. It got a sort by rank because the result source said, I guarantee whatever comes out of me will be sorted by rank. So if you wanted different web parts to be able to ask for different sort orders, you need to not set a sort order on the result source because otherwise you're guaranteeing it, right? Which isn't what you wanted to do here. Okay, so, yep. Right. So the result source does not, but I will get to how you do debugging in a second. There's good stuff there. Okay. So enough slides. Let's get back to product. What happens when you're actually configuring one of these things? Right? Well, let's go and take a look. We'll just grab any one of these and go to a change ranked results action. And this is where you get to see the query builder. Okay? This is that interface that we showed very briefly at the beginning. When we were configuring the web part, but this is, thank you. So this is the same experience in all of the different places where you can configure a transform. And this search experience, excuse me, this query builder experience lets you pick a result source that you're going to change. It lets you type in new text and actually use these nice property filters to very quickly add, for example, an author or a content class property restriction, so that makes it a little bit easier. And it's got the sorting tab where you can pick from a variety of sort options based on how you've configured your search schema. And if you set the top one to rank, you can add these dynamic ranking rules that I alluded to earlier where you can say, for example, you know, PDFs here, they're kind of nice. Let's promote them up a little bit, right? Or demote them because they're not too useful for this particular situation. I'll get to that last tab in a second for the people who are looking ahead. Okay, so that's the query builder. So at this point, you guys have a pretty solid understanding of query transforms, which is a great foundation for talking about advanced query rule stuff. So there's three topics that we're going to cover in advanced query rules. All of them have to do with interaction. So for example, how do the conditions in the query rule interact with the actions in the query rule? Okay? Or how do query rules interact with one another? Or how do query rules interact with the web parts that are showing their results? Okay, so let's cover that first one. The way that conditions and actions and query rules interact is using query variables, specifically a type of query variable that we call bound query variables because they are bound to what the user is searching for. Okay? This is in contrast to contextual query variables like who is the user, what date is it, what site are they searching on. So these are the things that get bound to what the user is searching for. And the system binds four of these for you, and they come in two pairs. The first pair is search box query and search terms. And the difference between these is search box query is whatever the user typed in the search box. It does not change. And search terms is whatever the query text is so far after any transforms. Okay? So if the user goes and types cameras, initially both search box query and search terms are going to be cameras. Now we hit the web part. It has a transform. It says replace search terms with whatever's in search box query plus a site restriction. What comes out of this, search box query is still cameras. It's never going to change. It's always what the user typed. Search terms is cameras plus the site restriction. Okay? So that's the first interesting pair. Second interesting pair is subject terms versus action terms. So I've already introduced you guys to action terms. These are the things that tell you how to act on the rest of the query. Well, the rest of the query is the subject of the query, what the user was actually searching for. Okay? So that's the distinction between these two. And the system takes care of binding and assigning these values for you. One quick second. And it does it by the type of query rule condition. Each query rule condition assigns those appropriately for that type of condition. There was a question? The action term condition only fires if it is not the only thing there, because it needs a subject to act on. Excellent question. So I'm sorry, the question was, what happens if the action, if you search for something that's just assets, for instance, and you have an action term condition with assets in it? And the answer is, it won't fire, it needs a subject to act on. Okay, so as I said, each of these different conditions sets these variables appropriately. Let's take a look at an example. Okay, we've got an abstracted query rule here. It's got two conditions, one that matches on the dictionary of topics in the Knowledge Center, and that's going to assign the entire query to subject terms. Because if you found it in the dictionary, that's what the user was searching for. The other one is an action term condition. It's going to look for asset types like picture or video. If it sees that, that's the action term, which means the rest of the query, the remainder, is going to be the subject term. So in comes cameras. First one of these condition matches, which means the entire thing gets assigned to subject terms. Now it's going to get sent to the action, right? Because this is how the conditions and the action sort of communicate. The action is just going to take whatever is in subject terms and send it along to asset results. So what goes to asset results? Just cameras. Now the user comes in and types TV picture. TV is the subject. It's what they're actually searching for. Picture is the action. How do you act on the subject? So the condition that's going to match here is going to be the second one, the action term condition, which means action terms is going to be assigned to the match, which here is picture. The remainder will go to subject terms. So this is what you get, action terms picture, subject terms TV. So when you go off to the action, what gets sent to asset results is TV. But that seems kind of a pity, right? Like, picture was useful. It told us how to act on the subject, and here we are not acting. We're just sending it along to asset results. What we could do instead is change the query that we send to asset search to act on it, to actually have, you know, send the subject and then a filter, content type, colon, whatever was in action terms. So now the query comes in. That one still matches. Variables are still assigned the same way, except now what we send to asset results is TV content type picture. Great. That's exactly what we wanted. But what happens when the user now searches for cameras? In comes the query. First condition matches. Subject terms is cameras. Action terms is not assigned. So this fails. What actually happens in this case is we assign the literal curly brace action terms. We keep it in the query. So it'll be content type colon and then curly braces, which is not what you want, right? What you actually want is you want to say that whole second line just shouldn't be there if action terms isn't set. And you can do that. When you are writing these query variables, you can use this syntax here where you have curly brace and a question mark. And what that means is if any query variable inside of this is empty or not assigned, get rid of all of it. So now what happens is we end up sending just subject terms to asset results, which is what we wanted in the first place. Now, the reason I'm going into this is because the fastest way to configure these is often to just type this stuff in yourself, in which case you're on your own, you got to remember this. But if you're using the query builder and you're using the dropdowns to insert these property filters, we do it for you. If we see that you're using action terms and that it could be empty, we'll just put the curly brace question mark around there for you so that you don't have to worry about it. Okay, so at this point, you guys probably have the impression query variables, useful, important, but terrible to debug. Okay, the laughter means yes. How do we know what the variables are being assigned, in what situations, and why, and what for, and whatnot? So the answer is we've actually got some nice debugging tools built into the query rule experience. So here, for example, I can come in and I can say, okay, let's go back to asset search. And now we've got the rules in asset search. And this line of things right here is a bunch of filters that I can apply to filter the query rules further, filter by active, inactive, et cetera. But that first query, that first filter is test the query. And here I can come in and I can type, what happens if the user searches for laptop pictures? And we filter down to just the query rules that fire in this situation. And even cooler, if you look over here in conditions, under whatever condition actually matched, we'll tell you how we assigned all of the bound query variables. So you can see, okay, in this case, subject terms is laptop, action terms is pictures. And over here, you can see the exact query that we're using to fill the result block. You could actually copy and paste that into a search box to see it work. Now, you can go even further. Remember back when we were creating these result blocks, and I just had to skip that first section? Let's take a look at that now. This first section lists, as you're building the result block, all of the bound variables that you have available to you, and roughly tells you what they are. For example, take a look at this. Action terms, the matched action term, for example, picture. That example is not hard-coded. We got it because you're using picture, right? So we're doing these things to try to help you remember how these bound variables are assigned, where they're coming from, and what they're for. Now, we've covered the four bound variables that the system automatically applies. Turns out that they're not the only ones, because you can create some yourself. So let's go to local SharePoint results for an example. The way that you create your own bound variables is using regular expressions. Regular expressions have this capability called capture groups, where you can say, if it matches, if the regular expression matches the user's query, then these parts of the query should go to this variable name, and these parts should go to this variable name. So one example here is with query rules hash SharePoint. And this is a query rule baked into the product that looks for hashtags using regular expressions and then uses capture groups to assign parts of the query to different variable names, like before and tag name. And we still show you this is how these variables were assigned. And this is how that final query is getting used. Okay, so there's a lot of power here, a lot of things that you can do. So let's get back to more advanced query rules. At this point, we've covered how conditions and actions interact. Now let's quickly cover how query rules interact across each other and how query rules interact with the web parts that are displaying the results. So to show why you need query rules to interact across each other, let's use an illustrative example. We'll go back to managing query rules for asset search. Get rid of the query we're filtered by. And say, okay, Actually, let's just perform the search. We'll come here to the asset search, and we'll search for cameras. And take a look at those promoted results. That's pretty terrible, right? Like, we've got two knowledge center promoted results, one sending you to the general knowledge center, the other one sending you to the camera-specific knowledge center entry. So why is this happening? Back to manage query rules. We're managing the asset query rules. Let's test it. And this is what's happening. We created two query rules that overlap, and they're both firing, and we're getting both of these promoted results. So at the very least, what we'd like is for the specific one to come first, at the very least. First show the thing specific to cameras, then show the more general one. But what would be even better is if the camera-specific one is showing, don't show the other one, right? Just don't even go there. Turns out we can do that. What you do is you select these query rules, and you click on Order Selected Rules. Got to give it a name, so we'll call this Topic Ordering. And this opens up a couple of new options in the query rules. So for example, now I can change the order. I could say cameras comes first, which means that its promoted results will show above the promoted results for the general topics query. And in addition, over here in the actions, I can say, you know what, if this guy goes off, just stop. Don't do the other rules in this group. And so you can see here that actually the rule for topics is grayed out, because when you do a search for cameras, this top rule fires and then it stops, so this guy doesn't get a chance to go. It normally would have, but it doesn't. When you're not testing a query, we show that they're both viable. You test something like laptops, and only the second one goes off. But if you test cameras, the first one goes off, the second one is gray to let you know it could have, but it didn't, because something stopped it. Right? Thank you. So this should make it a lot easier to debug these situations. Now, there's another couple of good uses for this ordering. Remember when I said that you can change the ranked results? This is a really powerful thing. And the problem is that if there are multiple query rules all trying to change the ranked results by changing their queries, there's no good way to reconcile that. Like, it's entirely possible that these different change query actions are asking for irreconcilable things. Well, what happens then is if we see multiple query rules trying to change the ranked results, we don't touch them. We leave them alone. Right? It's the only safe thing to do. But what that means is that if you've got multiple rules that want to change those ranked results, you can use orderings and those stop conditions in order to make sure only one fires for any given query. Okay, so this is particularly important when you're using this change ranked results action. One more interesting use, and I'll leave this one as an exercise to the listeners. It's possible to use orderings to create negative conditions, to say, I want this action to happen only if this condition is not met. Okay, so if you can figure out how to make that happen, come and talk to me afterwards. Great. So now we've covered how query rules can interact across each other. Let's talk about how query rules can interact with web parts. If we go and take a look at the, we'll go back to a better search. Oh, actually, I forgot to show you. Yeah, see, it actually works, right? You do the stop, and you only get one. Yay! Do a search for laptops, you still get the more general one, right? Okay, great. So the search results web part is what's showing all of these result blocks and all of these promoted results, right? But it's not the only web part on the page. And there's a lot of cases where you're going to want other web parts, perhaps even search-driven on the page, like, for example, a sidebar, or a bar at the bottom of the results after the normal search results. If the user scrolls all the way down, they see another set of options, right? And again, very often, these sidebars and last bet bars are driven by search. Well, query rules don't have to send their result block to the search results web part on the page. They can actually send it to other web parts that you put on there. So as an example, let's build a sidebar that when the user searches for topics in the Knowledge Center, shows pictures of that topic. That's what we're going to build. Okay? This is still going to be driven by query rules. It's still going to be a result block. We're just going to send it to a different web parser. So let's actually build that result block. Get out of this. And since we want it to happen for topics in the Knowledge Center, we already have a query rule that works with topics. We can actually just reuse it and change this to topics sidebar. The condition is correct. We don't need the promoted result. We do want to co-opt this result block, though, and change it, right? Change the copy. This is going to be sidebar results for subject terms. Now you guys know what subject terms are. I don't have to just say whatever the user typed. So sidebar results for subject terms. We can keep the filtering down by KC category, but we want pictures, like I said. So content type picture. Okay, so far so good. Now what we need to do is take this result block and route it to a different web part on the search experience. And the way we're going to do that, let's open up the routing option, and we assign a label to it, such as sidebar. And once we've assigned the label to this result block, now we can drop a web part on the page that's going to consume that label. And that's how we route the result block to the web part. So hit OK here. Hit save. We've got our topic sidebar. No, it's only going to happen when someone's searching for a topic. Now let's come back here to this page. We need a new web part, so we're going to edit page. Now, normally, you wouldn't add a sidebar right above refiners. Like, if my UX people were here, they'd hurt me. But they're not here, so I will do it because it's easier. Add a web part. And what we want here is the content search web part. It's under content rollup. And so other talks, other search talks, have touched on content search web parts. Go there for the in-depth details. But very briefly, what they are is a web part that's driven by search. It's going to show search results, but it can do a good job of formatting them. So we're going to add a content search web part. And the only change we need to make is we need to say, instead of running your own search, running your own query, and then showing those results, I want you to look at the search results web part and consume the sidebar label. Now, any result block from any query rule that fires, that has the label sidebar, doesn't matter why it fired, doesn't matter what intent you were looking for, doesn't matter how, what sort of scenario you understood, you label anything with sidebar, and this guy's going to consume it and show it. Hit OK. You can actually already see it working. Let's publish. And now, whenever you search for a topic, you get a sidebar of pictures. Whenever you search for something that is not a topic, you get no pictures because the rule didn't fire. Thank you. Yes. Now, what's really cool about this is that before, you could have created a sidebar in SharePoint 2010. You would have hard-coded the query. And if you were really smart, you could have hard-coded it in a way that you got no results back if it wasn't the right scenario and yada, yada, yada. Now what you can do is you can actually just drop a sidebar web part and completely control it from query rules. You can say, if someone is searching for topics, show one sidebar. If someone is searching for products, show a completely different sidebar with a completely different query that fills it. Right? It's actually really, really powerful when you think about it. Okay. So in conclusion, guys, what have we done today? We have built a specialized search experience, a search vertical, that responds intelligently to what the user is actually trying to do instead of just what they typed. We did it in a ridiculously short amount of time, and we did it without any code. So for IT pro folk in the audience, that means that if you've got special data and special scenarios, you can just go and build a search experience. You only even need site-level permissions. You don't even need site collection permissions. Right? Just go and create a new site and start building a search experience. For your devs in the audience, it means that you can actually spend your dev cycles building cool apps on top of this infrastructure. Right? We've got all this stuff here already for you. You just have to worry about your own business value and your own app value. Okay? And all you have to take away is that when it comes time to create a new search experience, a web part is the face, and a result source is the heart. That's how you guarantee the results that experience brings back. And in order to respond intelligently to what a user wants, you use query rules. You think of where is the user, you think of when the query rule should fire, and you think of what it should do. You understand, you act, and then you communicate. And finally, when you've got a very nice experience, you can advertise it. You can give it to users who ask for it explicitly using search navigation, and you can give it to users implicitly using query rules. So, thank you guys for coming. These are a bunch of other awesome search talks. Unfortunately, it's the next to last day of the conference, so a lot of them have already happened. But if you apparently have a lot of time in a laundry, where do they get these pictures? So if you can go back and watch a lot of these talks. Some of these are particularly good. That customizing search experiences one is going to tell you guys more about these content search web parts. The people one, and there's a video one as well, will tell you about some of these search experiences that we built out of the box using these tools. You can actually go and look at the config, open up the query rules manager and see how we did things, right? Open up the result sources and see how we did things. And of course, later on today at 5 p.m., we've got a chat where we talk about how we use query rules and result sources along with a bunch of other things to improve relevance in your actual enterprise search. So just to wrap up, please, a reminder, fill out these evaluations. These are actually super important. We really pay attention to them. I'm not going to beg you. I'm begging you. Go fill out these evaluations. This is how we make sure we keep giving you guys great talks. We read these and we care a lot about them. So please do that for us. Thank you very much. Hope you guys had a good time. And I'll be up here for questions.